He belonged to the pilot of the Flying Toast. He took issue with the pilot of the Needle attempting to destroy us, since we represented a sizable bounty, and they could hardly collect if we disappeared into the ocean. I took advantage by searching for a way out. There was an island ahead, and slightly to port, maybe only 2 or 3 dozen square kilometers in size, sporting forested hills above a sheltered lagoon with a sandy beach. If we could land on the beach and run for cover, that would be best. But I remembered Admiral Akbar's warnings about the planet's seas, and in case we were forced down before we reached that island, I wanted us to have as little water to cross as possible. We were functionally on the deck, skimming only 30 meters above the surface of the water, and moving slowly. The scanner showed additional ships coming from the rendezvous coordinates to the east, slower and bulkier than the first two, but no doubt also piloted by bounty hunters. Regardless of whether they wanted to destroy us or capture us, I began to feel like we were being followed by a flock of carrion birds. The Needle ship fired at me again from its dense battery of cannons, and as it did, the Flying Toast unloaded on the Needle. And I thought perhaps I understood why. The Needle pilot didn't want to capture us so much as deny our capture to all the others, but especially to the pilot of the Toast. There was an internecine rivalry there, and the Needle pilot was not playing to win, but rather playing to make everyone lose. We would lose the most, though I avoided the majority of the bolts. A few landed and overwhelmed our shields, and after that, another one struck and damaged our port engine. The ship rocked, and the smoke trail I thought should have been there earlier finally appeared. I thought that would be the end of us, but the Needle's shields dissolved under withering bombardment from the other bounty hunter. And then it was shot down, trailing fiery wreckage into the water. It was a welcome, if temporary, reprieve, for we looked to share a similar fate. Most of our speed had leached away, and all I could do was fight to keep the nose up and minimize the angle of our dive. I thought of restarting the starboard engine, but didn't want the fire to spread there as well. "We're going down," I said. "Coming," Nakari said. I didn't know why she'd be coming forward if the landing ramp was behind the cockpit, but there was no time to argue. I fought the stick and the failing engine as much as possible so that we skipped across the surface once before plowing into the still green waters of the lagoon. Cries of alarm erupted from Nakari, R2, and Drusel as they all pitched forward from the impact and joined me in the cockpit. Nakari was carrying in front of her the Kellen Biolabs Emergency Aquatics something-something, I couldn't catch it all, and it saved her from cracking her head against the dome of the cockpit. She grunted at the collision, but then told me to unbuckle as we began to sink into the dark waters of the lagoon that now appeared to be quite deep, even though it was a sheltered cove. "Don't touch the landing ramp," she said, tossing me a water filter for my nostrils. She had her slug thrower strapped to her back and her jacket zipped up tight. "We're getting out this way, but we have to do it before we sink too deep." "How?" "Manual release and mechanical ejection of the viewport. It'll slide up and away. Water will pour in. We grab our two and clear the ship. Deploy the raft underneath him, ride it to the surface." She twisted black dials and pulled levers in sequence at 3 points along the outside edge of the cockpit on the co-pilot's side. "You got to turn these right and then pull them down on your side, too," she said. Well, I hadn't noticed them before, but the dials and levers were there, blending them into the trim of the window. Presumably, they released the airtight and watertight seal. The atmosphere in the ship had given it a modicum of buoyancy, but we'd be ruining that in a moment, and we'd sink faster. I flipped and pulled until a trickle of water began to seep through the edges. "Ready? Got your breather in? Crouch down by R2 and we'll do this. Drusel?"
"Ready,"
the Given said. She didn't have a breathing apparatus attached to her nose, but any being that could survive in vacuum for a day could survive the water for a few minutes. She was braced against the bulkhead, anticipating the incoming rush of water. Her slicing hardware was slipped into her carry pack, presumably waterproof, which she slung over her shoulders. I squatted next to R2, feet planted wide to brace myself, and Nakari yanked down on a larger lever located above the viewport in the center. The ship shuddered. A metallic clang reverberated around us, and then a loud hiss and foosh announced the ejection of the transperisteel from its casing and the concomitant deluge of seawater into the ship.